You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Monday, June 17th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Well, hope you all had a fantastic weekend. Happy belated Father's Day to all of those of you out there. Hope you had a good weekend. If you are a father, got to spend it with your father, even grandfathers and that sort of thing. And so appreciate you all being with us here on this Monday afternoon. Man, it's a hot one outside, but it's the middle of June, so what else can you expect in the state of Alabama? We got a ton to talk about on the show today, but before we get into that, Uncle T-Bone and joining me in the studio. What's up, man? Happy Monday and happy belated Father's Day to you. Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, I had a great weekend. I appreciate you giving me a shout out for Father's Day, my friend. It was awesome. I spoke to a lot of fathers out there around the area, and I think everyone had a nice, relaxing weekend. It was a good one. Hit church yesterday, then got ready and watched the U.S. Open.
Yes.
Made my boys watch it with me, and we had a really good time watching that. It was a very exciting tournament. I know we're going to have a lot of thoughts on that. It was one of the better majors I've seen in a long time. Somebody said something about Bryson DeChambeau on Friday at the live remote at Moe's Bent Creek, brought to you by Sensor Green for air that's cool and clean. I'm not going to name any names, but somebody said keep an eye out for that guy this weekend. So it was a good one to watch. Tons of recruiting information out there.
Yes.
Not just with Auburn football, but everyone's firing as hard and fast as they can at big-time recruits right now, trying to get them locked up before school starts back their senior seasons. I mean, we've got the NBA Finals. I liked Dallas the other night. Luka finally played up to the potential that everybody in the media thinks he should play up to every time he plays. But I say he's had a good series and has been pretty much everything Dallas had up until Friday night when everyone else in the supporting cast got around him, and they looked really good. Don't know, you know, the Celtics had to fly back. We should have acknowledged that Friday. They're flying back now to try and win on their home court. It's going to be a tough battle for Dallas to come back this weekend.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about all that and so much more here on the Monday edition of On the Line. We want to hear from you. You can get to us in a couple of ways. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390. You can also text us. Okay, you can text us in the On the Line text box. That is 334-784-1067. We want to hear your thoughts, comments, questions, and concerns from anything over the weekend, whether it's something that we're currently talking about, something that you want us to talk about, doesn't matter. Something that we may have missed, we want to hear from you. So give us a call, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. I drove in back this morning from Birmingham, was up seeing my dad this weekend. We went to a very nice dinner Saturday night, his favorite place. I don't know if you've been to Birmingham in a while there, Uncle T-Bone, but up there in the Summit, Fleming's, the steakhouse up there.
Oh, yeah.
That is his favorite spot, and that's obviously it's up there, but it's, you know, a one time a year thing that he wants to go, and so that's what we did.
Nice.
On Saturday, and then got to lay around and watch the U.S. Open this weekend, which is where we begin today. And I don't know who that person was that highlighted Bryson DeChambeau that said to watch out for him. I mean, they made a really bold prediction picking a guy that was already in the top five to, you know, make a run and win the U.S. Open. But Bryson DeChambeau did just that. And it was a battle this weekend at the U.S. Open at Pinehurst number two. So many storylines, so many things to dive into. But Bryson DeChambeau shoots a final round 71. One over par, shoots 6 under for the tournament, and he walks away $4.3 million richer, the two-time major tournament winner, both of them at the U.S. Open. What a story for Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah, shoot 6 under for the tournament. Played lights out golf. I'm talking about just lights out, especially Saturday. I mean, he was in fuego on Saturday. Came out with that strong first round. Kind of began to start making his move. Moving day on Friday was for Bryson. And then on Saturday, he took control of the tournament, Jacob. Hitting just mega bombs. Outrageous drives. Right down the middle. Stayed in the short grass all day. Throwing wedge after wedge up there when other people are hacking it around over in those natural areas with the sawgrass and the sand and the whatever grass. I've seen better grass at a Doobie Brothers concert than I saw at the U.S. Open in some of those natural areas. And then I'm just saying, I mean, him, and then you kind of saw Rory doing the same thing, hitting these just lasers. I mean, you can't describe how far they're hitting the golf ball off the tee box. And then on Sunday came around, and Bryson started struggling with that driver. Now, he was still getting the distance, but that thing was going everywhere. And he put on, in my opinion, not having his best stuff, one of the all-time grinds I've ever seen in a major golf tournament to win that tournament. There were several times where he hit the ball out of play or close to out of play as you can or in these natural areas, and then on 18 with maybe one of the best pars I've ever seen in a golf tournament to win that tournament. Several times he could have waved the white flag. Never gave up, never surrendered. Rory had all the momentum going midway through that last round, was hitting the ball great, was putting lights out, putting the ball in the perfect spots on the green, and then all of a sudden misses that one short putt where he just kind of yanked it left, and things got a little squirrely at that point for him. But, you know, it's not like Bryson didn't miss a short putt or two as well, but grinded through the entire thing to hold on and win the U.S. Open at 6 under. Jacob, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people only were under par.
Unbelievable. And it's something that we had talked about going into the week and going into Thursday, Friday, was we wanted to see that. And it was expected, right? It was expected going into Pinehurst number 2 because we knew that the course conditions were going to be good for the course. But in terms of other golf, I guess in comparison to other golf courses, I mean, it's not fair to compare it to Augusta National, but we knew they were going to make it as difficult as possible. And with the sand on the side and with the paper cut bushes on the side and the dead grass in the fairway and the bunkers being what they were and the greens being whatever you want to call them and all the grass growing different ways and all the things that they talked about, okay, we knew it was going to be difficult. And we were wanting to see a tournament like this. We were wanting to see a grind, a fight, and somebody win a major golf tournament without having to shoot 20 under par.
Yeah, and, no doubt.
And that's what we got to see with Bryson DeChambeau and Rory McIlroy. And people are forgetting that Tony Finau, Patrick Cantlay, Hideki Matsuyama, they were all right there in the mix at one point. I mean, heck, Xander Schauffele got top 10. Did anybody know that without looking at the scoreboard? You probably wouldn't know it by watching it on television, but he was up there. And
tied for 7th at 1 under for the tournament. Just a solid tournament, just kind of went about his business. And,
yeah,
you know, if things would have gotten a little worse out there, the field might have come back to him.
And that's what you want to see. Going into a Sunday round, you want to see the biggest names in the sport that are all in a tight leaderboard, which is what we had going into yesterday. And you said it. Bryson DeChambeau, I mean, he played one of the best over par rounds you're ever going to see because there was never anything easy. After about hole 5, or I guess even hole 4 where he bogeyed, I mean, he couldn't find a fairway with his driver if his life depended on it. And in those situations, it almost does because you're playing in one of the biggest tournaments in the world. And I kept saying to my dad, I said, man, at what point do you put the driver away?
Seriously.
Bring out the 3-wood, bring out a hybrid, bring out a 2-iron for all I care. But he couldn't find the fairway. And we kept waiting for, when's he going to get a bad lie? When's he going to get a bad lie? When's he going to get a bad lie? And he never got a great one, but he got out of it every time.
You know, the lie that was on 18, strictly because of how his swing was hindered by a magnolia tree right there.
And then the root that was next to it.
Was really the worst one he got.
Yeah.
And punched it out down awkwardly to a bunker, not near the green, really. That was a awfully long bunker shot. And hits one of the better bunker shots you'll ever see on PGA 55 Tour.
55 yards.
I mean, that is hard.
That's ridiculously hard.
That is very hard. And he just kept slightly getting out of trouble. One extra time he doesn't get out of trouble in that tournament, he doesn't win it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how close the margin for error is in the U.S. Open. I think, you know, a lot of people are talking about Rory McIlroy, and I'm not going to get on here today, Jacob, and say the guy gagged a maggot. I'm not going to say he's a choker, a Scott Hoker, a yoker, that I got texts from all kinds of people yesterday. Uncle T, you going to call them the March Maggots like you did Auburn? No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get on here and say the man gagged a maggot, okay? He struggled with that flat stick twice. And it cost him. Margin of error. The one I think he should be kicking himself is Tony Finau.
Oh, Tony Finau, yeah.
The triple bogey on Saturday cost him the tournament.
Isn't that crazy?
One hole.
Yeah.
That's what it's like in these majors. 13 people shoot under par in the entire tournament yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
13. Bryson DeChambeau shoots plus one, by far the worst round he had in the tournament. If he shoots plus two, he probably doesn't win it.
Well, think about old Ludvig Åberg, right, who was right there to start Sunday, and he starts on hole two with a triple bogey because he went into the side and then he hit it in the road and went out of bounds and had to get a triple bogey, and then he played himself right out of the tournament on that one hole. But I go back to McIlroy because there's a lot of conversation about Bryson that I want to get to. But, of course, there's a lot of conversation about the guy that loses, right? The guy who comes in second, the first loser, if you will. And that is Rory McIlroy. But you look, before he makes that bad stretch down the back nine, he started in the middle of his round, he caught fire, Uncle T-Bone. He caught absolute fire. He birdied 4 out of 5 holes between 9 and 13. He birdied 4 out of 5. I have not looked at everybody's scorecard from this tournament, but I would be willing to bet nobody else did that in this U.S. Open. Birdie 4 out of 5? That's not, that's unheard of.
And it's not like he was knocking it in the leather there. He was dropping 22, 25-foot putts with a lot of break on greens that were beginning to really wilt out, and was hitting the ball in probably on a few of those greens in about the only place even close to that distance you could make a putt, because if you're 22 feet away from the hole any other way, you're probably rolling off the green.
And if you miss the hole with those putts, it's gone.
It's gone, so.
It's gone. And so he was building confidence. He was building a lot of momentum. The crowd was on his side. Rory's always been a fan favorite, always has, always will. And all of a sudden, you look up, and Rory McIlroy's in the lead. He's in the lead at the U.S. Open. He had been climbing from behind this whole time, and he's in the lead. He's birdied 4 out of his last 5. He pars number 14. You're thinking, here we go. He's got 4 holes. Bryson has 5. And Rory, if he holds true, could win the U.S. Open. And he goes,
I believed at that point he was going to win.
I felt really good about it. Yeah.
Because when he gets on one of those rolls and that momentum just takes him to victory.
And again, Bryson couldn't get off the tee in safety, right? He was struggling off the tee, and I thought, okay, takes one bad lie, like he got on 18, but it takes one of those earlier than that.
Right.
And Rory to roll in one more bird, and it's over. The tournament would have been done right then and there. But then Rory goes a complete 180 and then goes on to bogey 3 of his last 4 and 2 of the most gut-wrenching missed putts you're ever going to see in professional golf. 2 putts
painful
that I don't think combined for more than 5.5 feet.
Oh, man, I think they were just both outside the leather. That first one was a little bit closer. Boy, he chicken winged that bad with that left arm, and it was just a pure yank. Still caught a good mid of cup.
I mean, it went halfway down.
And, you know, if he's not hitting at that pace that he's hitting at, it probably goes in. I'll tell you who was out there grinding for their life, too. I was very impressed with him because he hit the ball so terribly all day long was Patrick Cantlay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like he couldn't hit a green to save his life.
And yet he still played.
And he almost won the tournament.
Yeah. He was there until the end, until he bogeyed 16.
You got to think, too, that the heat started getting to a few of these players because it was red hot out there yesterday. It was boiling hot at the house. the Matthew Pavon, the French guy. I just don't think that those type players are used to playing in that type of heat. I could be wrong, but you started seeing him hitting some kind of Ole shots where you're getting fatigued. I mean, but he was in the mix as well for quite some time. Only finishes three back. I can think of 5 to 7 shots he hit that if he had back, he'd have been on top.
Mm-hmm. He lazy swung on a lot of those iron shots.
I think he was getting tired.
I think so too.
I think the heat was beginning to get to him. And Russell Henley got very hot there for a second too and started making some noise. I believe he was the low round of the day with Tony Finau at 67. That's 3 under out there. Golly, Tony Finau's got to be kicking himself. He really, made that one mistake on Saturday that cost him the tournament.
Yeah, he's one of my dad's favorite players just because of he watched Full Swing and Tony Finau's family being such a big part of his game and his life and how they travel with him and everything. So we were cheering for Finau for sure, but came down to after, like I said, after Cantlay. After he bogeyed 16, he was out. He got the 5 on the par 4. He was out, and it came down to Rory and Bryson. It came down to DeChambeau and McIlroy, and you know the results, and there's a lot more to talk about those results when we come back here on the Monday edition of On the Line. We want to hear from you, 334-321-1390. That's the number to call us. You can also shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. Talking more from the U.S. Open, Pinehurst number 2, where Bryson DeChambeau wins his second U.S. Open. We'll talk more about that after this here on ESPN 1067.
You are on the line on ESPN 1067, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 1067 app.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 1067, he's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins, talking the U.S. Open from this weekend as Bryson DeChambeau gets his second major tournament victory. And isn't it funny that both of his major victories are at the U.S. Open? And I'll be honest, I had forgotten the other one was the U.S. Open. Not that it was the U.S. Open, but that it was the one back during COVID. It was the 2020 U.S. Open, and they showed a clip yesterday during the final round of him walking up 18 as he was already had the tournament in hand, and there were about 30 people standing around the green, all separated, all wearing masks, and all just, I mean, just barely clapping. I mean, there was nobody there. It was the volunteers of the tournament that had to be there to make it run. That was it. So the celebration that you saw yesterday from Bryson when he does tap in on 18 after one of the most miraculous saves you've ever seen.
A little bit more than a tap in.
Well, you know what I mean. When he finished out the hole.
That was no easy putt.
No, but he put that thing within a few feet coming out of that bunker from 55 yards.
I would say any putt over a foot yesterday, I saw professional golfers grinding as hard as I've ever seen them grind on television.
You saw some buckling at the knees.
If you got on, and it wasn't because of the pressure necessarily and it being a U.S. Open. These guys play in majors all the time. Now, there is added pressure.
Sure.
But those greens were so squirrely. If you got on the wrong side of the hole, especially late in the afternoon, good luck.
I mean, they were literally, the strategy half the time was hit it 20 yards short of the green and just run it up there, because if you go long, you're dead. You're done. And that's tough, man. And they described it really well in the broadcast. I described it as a dartboard on Friday, but they described it as an upside-down salad bowl, which I think is extremely good too, right? Take a bowl, flip it upside down. The flat part on the bottom, that's what you have to hit. And if you don't hit that, it's gone. And so, but what I was getting at was the celebration and the just craziness that you saw from Bryson DeChambeau when he finally won yesterday. I mean, that's his first real major victory that he got to embrace and he got to feel with the crowd, who was fantastic for him all week. I have more to get on that in just a second, but lots of people talking about Rory McIlroy today because of, yes, he blew it. I'll say it. He blew it. He had the U.S. Open in his hands and he lost it. He had the lead. Had one of the best runs of the week, birding 4 out of 5. And then he bogeyed 3 out of 4.
Unbelievable.
Missing 2 putts that, again, combined to 5 or 5.5 feet. Chicken wing the first one, baby the second one. It died on him, and he lost the tournament. And you hate it, because I like Rory McIlroy.
I
do.
Too.
I really like him. And he's a guy that has had more pressure to win in the last decade than anybody else, because it's been that long and then some since he's won a major. And we were talking about during the break,
right,
where Rory got caught up in all of that PGA Live Tour crossfire, where he just became the face of the PGA and had to face so much criticism and so many questions all the time, where, I mean, I don't even get how he was playing golf the way he was, having to go through all of that. And yet, here he was on one of the biggest stages, and he couldn't get it done.
You know, look, don't feel too sorry for him. He won over $2 million yesterday. The harsh reality is that he lost the Open, and DeChambeau did just enough to win.
Yep.
And that is the agonizing take in sports. We see it all the time. Heck, 4th and 31 this last fall. You had it. The game was over. The match was over. You had it in your grasp, and you let it slip away.
Yep.
And that is the agony of defeat, right?
I mean, that's worse. That's worse than just getting beat down, right?
I think it is.
That's a fun question, but
there is nothing worse than having your team or you having something right in your grasp and watching it slip away.
Rather than walking into, you know,
I'd rather
the Super
get
Bowl.
Knocked out, just yeah. Bam, you're done. Bama 42, Auburn 0. Okay, yeah. I can just take it to the bar at halftime, right?
And or pull what is a – I mean, some of these guys –
I would rather get blown out than to get that close and get beat.
I mean, there was a guy that shot back-to-back 80s and for the first two rounds and never even smelled the weekend. So would you rather do
– Well, I don't know. If I was that guy, I'd probably like to make the cut. But, yeah, I mean, because you
get
paid.
At least make a few dollars.
But the harsh reality is, I'm not going to say he gave it away, but he let it slip away. And you said it, man. That guy's been under about as much stress as just about anybody in professional golf over the last few years. A, he got caught up in that whole Live thing, like you mentioned. I'm sure he probably didn't want to get caught up in all that. And it's just like it just got all thrown on his back.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he's had some family issues. He's working through some marriage problems. And good for him and his wife for trying to work it out.
I saw that.
That doesn't help. Any kind of, you got problems off the course or off the field, unfortunately, over time, no matter what, and no matter how strong you are, no matter how mentally tough you are, and he is mentally tough, that stuff matriculates into your game.
Especially in the game of golf that is more mental than anything, some would argue.
That's what one of my boys said yesterday. Dad, they just keep missing putts. And I was like, yeah. Because it's brutal.
But they miss putts more than I've ever seen.
It's a combination of it being a major and the greens being absolutely brutal. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was expecting them to be worse. I think the greens held up a lot better than I thought they were going to. I felt like with this heat that it was just going to be a brown patch out there like you see over there in Scotland during the British Open.
Yeah.
You know, but the greens held up pretty well. That course was, we talked about it, we called it. I like to see it a couple of times a year. Hopefully we'll see it. I like to see these pros suffer from time to time over there in Great Britain when they go at it for the Open Championship. You know, I love to see it when that weather comes in and that wind
and
comes
the rain.
In and
yeah.
They're all huffing and puffing. But this course gave them everything they wanted and then some. And that's why that tournament gave us viewers everything we wanted and then some.
I know we're up against a break. The music's going to kick us out of here in just a minute, but have you ever in your life in sports seen a 180 from the public eye that Bryson DeChambeau has taken? A guy that was a true villain, a guy that was hated universally across the game of golf, across the sport, across the world of people that watch golf, of golf fans. And all of a sudden, here he is. Everybody was rooting for Bryson DeChambeau yesterday. Yeah. Everybody at the course was rooting for him. They were high-fiving. They were cheering. He was signing autographs. He was fist-pumping. He was high-fiving. He was waving to him. He was talking to him. He was working the crowd. And you know what? I found myself cheering for him.
Absolutely.
Which I've never done in my life.
How in the world can you keep a guy like that off your Olympic team?
I know.
That's ridiculous. That is just ridiculous, Jacob.
And, you know, people call him a sellout. Okay, he made more money with the stroke of a pen than any of us will see combined in our lives.
I mean, the guy is a talent. He's a raw talent. He's quirky. He does it his way. And now he's starting to embrace the crowds, and the crowds are embracing him. Watch out.
I think he matured, and that's what I'll leave it at. I think he grew up, and Bryson DeChambeau is now a two-time U.S. Open champion. We'll talk some more about that coming up in hour number two, but Auburn football recruiting, it was a big weekend here on the Plains as well. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into the first hour here on a Monday afternoon on ESPN 106.7. He is Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins with you for On the Line here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a text, 334-784-1067. Your thoughts on the U.S. Open. We talked a lot about that there in those first 30 minutes. We'll get back to that in hour number two. And definitely want to get your thoughts on what was another, probably the biggest, recruiting weekend so far for Hugh Freeze and Auburn football. Again, the text box, 334-784-1067. There were a lot of big names on campus, Uncle T-Bone, and there was a lot of potential for what Auburn could do and what they could do in the future for this 2025 class. But the good news is, the goal of these recruiting weekends is to get commitments, and Auburn did just that with the commitment of the safety Eric Winters from down in Enterprise. And this should be no surprise to anybody that listens to this show, because our good friend Jeff down in Enterprise, he's been telling us for weeks, don't worry about the Enterprise kids. He said, Auburn is in good hands down in Enterprise, and they're in good standing down in that part of the state. And sure enough, Eric Winters, big-time safety from Enterprise, commits to Auburn over the weekend.
Four-star, 6'2", 195-pound safety. You know, depending on what recruiting service you're looking at, he's ranked anywhere from the number 4 to 8 to 10 player in the state. A very good get for the Tigers, who battled hard for the commitment over the University of Georgia. I saw him play last year when Enterprise came to town and upset the Baby Tigers over at historic Duck Sanford Stadium. And immediately when I saw that kid on the field, I wanted to know who he was, and went and got a roster and started asking questions about him. And he looks the part for a high school big-time prospect. And look, Auburn's not done yet by any means. That was a solid victory on the recruiting trail. And there's a few more defensive backs, especially around the state. I have gotten some word from some folks I know that Auburn's big time in the mix for a guy out of Carrollton who's a cornerback named Shamar Arnaud. That he is a player, a little bit underrated. He's a 6'2 cornerback. Very good friends in Carrollton with Juju Lewis, who Auburn is all over.
Who was here this weekend.
Who was also here this weekend. And not to mention, there is a pipeline of talent in Carrollton, Georgia, Jacob. That I don't know what they're doing up there, but they've got 7 to 10 guys over the from last year, this year, and next year who are all massive recruits. They've got to be winning the state title over there.
Which is why it's so important that Auburn continues to push back into the state of Georgia, where they've recruited forever. I mean, that's no secret that Auburn has gone into that state and gotten some really talented players. But there has become a giant obstacle in the way, and it's red and black. Mm-hmm. It's not difficult to find it. It's Kirby Smart in Georgia. And Auburn has had to overcome that, and they've had to push up against that, and I think that they've done an okay job, and I think they continue to do a good job and do a better job as the days go on, because it's important. We've talked about a ton how Auburn has to win the state of Alabama, but man, imagine if you start going in and picking off players out of Georgia, Louisiana, Tennessee, which Auburn's not afraid to do, and they are for sure trying to do it.
Yeah, I mean, they've already got a commitment from a guy from Brentwood, Tennessee. I think that another massive obstacle over the last 10 years for Auburn and Georgia has been Clemson. They have continually come down, especially in North Georgia and Atlanta, and recruited that area with a fiery passion. and taking a lot of commitments, potential commitments away from Auburn and other schools. Alabama has become a big player, obviously, over in the Atlanta market in the surrounding area under Nick Saban. We'll see how that continues under Kalen DeBoer. But everybody recruits Georgia, Florida, Clemson. I mean, it's got to be probably, if not the top state, it's got to be the top state. Or close to it for high school.
Texas, I think it's top five.
Texas, Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, I think Alabama, people, Texas,
you know,
Georgia.
For a long time, people said California. I'm not quite the believer in that. Obviously, Florida puts out a ton of talent. But, I mean, it's huge, huge important to Auburn and has been historically to recruit well over there, Jacob. But I'm going to tell you right now, I think that there's early on in this staff with Hugh Freeze at Auburn, the emphasis is to get back first in the major battles in Alabama, specifically down in the Mobile area, in Baldwin County areas, where Alabama has just almost shut Auburn out under Nick Saban. And they're doing so. Auburn's doing this. This emphasis, and there is a ridiculous amount of talent in the state of Alabama, the top 20 in Alabama this year, all players, all big-time recruits, maybe more talent this year than in any year past, except for at wide receiver last year where the talent was just unbelievable coming out of Alabama. So I know for a fact that this staff is putting key emphasis on Alabama first. They've got a ton of connections over in Mississippi and are going to continue to utilize those, North Florida and Georgia. You really, if you can build the core of your roster, if you're Auburn, out of those four states, and you're winning recruiting battles over the LSUs, Alabama, Georgias, and Clemsons of the world.
Which is why the Eric Winters commitment this weekend was so big. I mean, he chose Auburn over Georgia, Miami, and others. And look, all the people in recruiting, all of the guys that cover this for a daily, for a living, right? They have continued to say, this is a huge get. And some will be like, oh, he's only a four-star. But no. He is a huge four-star. And look, I think he's SEC ready. I think he's going to be a phenomenal safety in the SEC. And I think he's a guy that if he does the right things and he stays healthy, right, I think you could see him play on Sundays. I think he's that good. I think he's that talented. I think he's that smart. And he chose Auburn because he believes he can do that too. And he believes that Auburn can make him that. And you look at what Auburn's building in the secondary, not just for what they're going to put on the field this year, Uncle T-Bone, but what they're going to bring in next year and the year after. Because, man, 2025's already going great. Auburn's in the top 10. They're pushing the top 5 right now. And any recruiting rankings you look at, I got number 6 right now on 247. They're talking about 2026 being a top 3 class in the country. And a lot of that is on the defensive side, which is why you land a guy like Eric Winters from Enterprise, who, again, you said it, Auburn just hasn't gone down there. They haven't been able to do what they needed to do in these areas of the state, and they get a big commitment this weekend from a guy that's a future superstar in the SEC. Mark my words.
I count 15 total commitments right now. And look, it's just a commitment. No one's signed yet, and we all know what that means. It's going to be a battle for every one of these players that Auburn has committed to hold on to from here on out. Out of those 15, 12 are from the four states that I mentioned, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. It's 80%. The rest, you got a guy out of Tennessee, a guy out of Maryland, and a guy out of Oklahoma. The guy out of Maryland's very underrated, by the way. The 6'2", 205 kid,
back. Yeah.
Bryce Dees, I've heard nothing but these coaches raving about getting him, and they're very happy about it. But 80% of your commitment class right now to those four states, and I think you're going to continue to see that. They'll go outside where they've got connections or they get interest as the program gets better and better from key personnel and go after that. But you got to get in these battles in Alabama and Georgia specifically. I mean, that's your corridor, man. You can just draw a 250-mile radius around Auburn, Alabama, and there's your recruiting. You've got to win in these areas. You got to win these battles when Auburn High is playing Enterprise every year and no school out of Georgia is.
Yeah, well, some other exciting things that happened over the weekend and what was a huge recruiting weekend for Auburn. You had a couple of guys take some visits this weekend that then shut down their commitments, right? They committed or had been committed secretly, privately, and shut it down. One of those guys being Dante Core, the corner from Florida. There you go, right? Uncle T-Bone, a three-star from the state of Florida. He was here this weekend, shut it down. He heard out Ole Miss for a little bit, but said, nope, I'm good to go. Auburn's where I want to be, and Auburn is where I want to be. And so, and will be, is even the more important thing there. So he was a guy that shut it down this weekend, which you like to see that. And today's something we always go back to, that you don't, you hope you don't have to worry about that. Still stay in touch and all those sort of things.
Yeah, I mean, I saw where Cardae Smith, the big offensive lineman from Mobile, said, there's no switching. I'm committed. Still going to take my visits, though. And it's, I saw a quote from a wide receiver who's committed to Pitt right now, I believe on the Rivals National Board. There's an article about it. And he's committed to Pitt. I'm committed to Pitt, four-star wide receiver. But until I sign the dotted line, he said it himself, I'm still open. And I'm like, this is just a crazy new world. And then the Falk kid, the inside linebacker from Highland Home, also shut his down.
Ryan Gee shut his down this weekend.
But you're like, you know, are you really shut down if you're still taking visits? And but it just got, I think the reason why they're still taking visits is because teams are shelling out money for people to take visits.
I mean,
so then go get your money and take your visits and have a nice time, and then we'll see you in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, go spend a Thursday through Sunday somewhere, get pampered for 4 days, stay in a nice hotel, eat all the food that you want, and just be told how great you are for 3 days. And then if you want to go there, cool. If you want to stay where you are, then stay where you are. But I look at guys like Ryan Gee, the tight end, who has been, he's been committed to Auburn forever. He shut it down. He's going to stay here this weekend, or he's going to stay in Auburn after visiting this weekend. Before we get to who was the highlight of the weekend, our guy Jeff down in Enterprise says, keep your eye on Zion Grady and Alvin Henderson down at Elba.
Yep.
Going to Penn State is not an absolute, is what he says.
No.
And I think he's right on that, Uncle T-Bone.
No.
That's been a hot topic for a long time.
Yeah, I think that behind the scenes, there's been mucho contact between the Auburn staff and Alvin Henderson, the running back from Elba down there in the Wiregrass. And I believe that he'll be coming to Auburn. I believe he's beginning to, although committed to Penn State, I believe he is trending towards Auburn. Zion Grady as well.
That dude's a beast.
Yeah, a total beast.
He's down there in Enterprise. He's a 6'4 edge, four-star.
There's
down there.
A couple of guys in the 26 class I think you should keep an eye on here soon around Big Cat weekend. Anthony Jones, the edge from St. Paul, is getting a lot of love from Auburn right now and showing a lot of them. I think Auburn takes two running backs in this cycle, by the way.
For 26?
Yeah, and I think a name for 25, a name to watch is Dwayne Morris. I believe he's out of Tennessee. That's a bigger type back. That's your speed guy, and I think Alvin Henderson's a guy you might get in there you want as your true tailback.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, folks, I've said this until I'm blue in the face, and I'm going to keep saying it, Jacob. This staff is going to recruit for competition. Just because there's four quarterbacks over there doesn't mean they're not going to go after the number one quarterback that they think in this class, right?
Which they are.
And it seemed like to me under previous staffs, okay, we got our guy, we're good, we're not going to keep bringing in the best talent. No, man, you want that quarterback room to look like it did for Alabama, like it, when they had Hurts and Mac Jones and Tua and Bryce Young was coming in. I mean, you want the best of the best.
Well, you've got to prepare for the future.
And you've got to prepare for guys leaving, and you got to see it. You know, you want guys who are willing to compete. You got to prepare for injuries. You got to prepare for NIL, for transfer portal, you name it. And Auburn's got a stable of quarterbacks over there right now that I think are going to be better than they were last year, and there's going to be more competition this summer, and I think it's going to continue into the fall, and I think you're going to have a better option in case somebody gets hurt, right? But they're going to try and get a top-notch quarterback just about every single year, bud, and maybe even look into the portal.
Which is what, well, recruiting-wise, they did that this weekend with the number one quarterback in the country, Juju Julian Lewis, who was on campus, took a bunch of photos. He tweeted out when he was done, or he may have put it on Instagram, I can't remember, the photos of him in the Auburn photo shoot, and basically asked the question, is this home? Is this where I need to be? Is this where I should take my talents for college ball? And I said it late last week. I think we talked about this on Friday when we were out at Moe's. If you are USC and Lincoln Riley, I mean, are you not just scared to death? I mean, would you not be worried about what he has been doing? I mean, he's been to Auburn. You're threatening double-digit times. I mean, the guy has been back to Auburn numerous times and just took an official visit. And from everything I heard, he loved it. Everything went well, as far as I'm concerned. And I think there's a real possibility that this happens. And we've talked about how if one goes, many of them go in a good way.
Domino.
Where the domino effect, where if you get one, you're going to get a lot of them. Maybe not all of them, but you're going to get a lot of them. And Auburn doesn't care. Auburn doesn't is not worried about hurting the feelings of a Walker White who's coming in this year as a freshman because he wants to be the future star at Auburn. Who cares? Auburn's going after the best of the best, like you said, Uncle T-Bone. And the word I go back to is refreshing. It's refreshing that Auburn continues to push for the best of the best at every position, at every single class, 24, 25, 26, 27, and beyond. They don't care. They're going after them, and they're going to do everything they can to get them here on the Plains.
Yeah, I mean, first step is get them to visit, right? Well, I guess make contact with them and establish a relationship and then get them on campus. You keep getting kids on campus, and Julian Lewis has been here several times to visit unofficially and officially, plus to camp here on 7-on-7s. So the more he's here and the more he's not at where he's committed, all the way clear across the country. And look, Lincoln Riley has put some people in the pros, man. You know, he's no joke. USC is a legit program, and he's trying to rebuild it. And they're taking a big step in joining what is now one of the big boy conferences, one of two, the SEC and the Big Ten. It remains to be seen which one's going to be bigger and badder from season to season. But, you know, that's legit. You're going to showcase your skills at Southern California. But you know what? You're going to showcase them here at Auburn now, too. Look at the young receivers and talent at tight end also that Auburn would put around any big-time quarterback, right? And you're going to see such a difference this fall with the playmaking ability on the outside, especially with the Cam Colemans of the world and the transfer portal guys you're bringing in and Perry Thompson, who people have just kind of forgotten about because he wasn't here this spring. Buckle up and get ready. That guy's legit too. And you're going to continue to bring in other wide receivers following it up like Cunningham out of Mississippi right now, who Auburn's trending, who might be the number one receiver in the country when it's all said and done on signing day. So, why wouldn't you want to get with these young guys? Why not Auburn? Why not be part of something special? Why not change the narrative that's changing and help change it even further and make it a championship program again? And you know what? You're just 2 hours down the road. Mommy and Daddy can come see you too. And we're going to match anybody's NIL money for him. I can promise you that.
334-321-1390. That's the number to call in. Get you through to us. Also, shoot us a text, 334-784-1067. We'll wrap up hour number one after this.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-494-6139. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-494-6139.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Owned and operated by Auburn alumni Andy Senton, the Palms Pet Resort at 203 East University Drive near campus is your furry friend's home away from home. Offering boarding, pet daycare, and in-house grooming, your pet will love the Palms' 10,000-square-foot facility, enormous 15,000-square-foot outdoor play space, artificial turf for comfort, play structures, and outdoor covered space. Contact them today at pawms.com. The Palms, your furry friend's home away from home.
Dip your toe in the H2O this summer with Splash Pools. Splash Pools specializes in design and construction of custom liner or gunite pools. Now offering weekly pool maintenance services to East Alabama, sit back and relax while Splash Pools designs, builds, and maintains your dream pool from start to finish. Check out Splash Pools' amazing gallery of work and customer testimonials at backyardvacation.com. From design to installation on any pools, spas, or hardscapes, dip your toe in the H2O with Splash Pools, your backyard vacation.
Hey, sports fans, Jeff Myers here, First Baptist Church of Opelika. Well, we know the NBA playoffs are well in steam into the finals, and it's interesting to me that probably the two most valuable players as of yet, their last names are Porzingis and Doncic. The NHL finals are going on, and I can't pronounce half the players on those teams. And basically, Major League Baseball, most of those names are that which are, can I just be honest, most of them are what we don't consider traditional American names. There's not a whole lot of Smiths and Joneses that are playing at those levels. Why? Because we finally have sports at a global level. What does this mean? We're discovering that not all the best athletes are born on the continental U.S. In fact, we are a statistical minority to the population of the whole world. Now, most of us are going to be surprised one day, we believe on Jesus, when we get to heaven, that on earth, most of those people didn't look like us, nor did they speak the same language as us. That's why John 3:16 says, for God so loved the world, not just the people that look like us, sound like us, etc. Sports has given us a pretty good picture of God's love for all the world, not just the world we grew up in. Y'all have a great day.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We got a few more minutes here in hour number one on the Monday edition of On the Line. Appreciate you being with us. We also appreciate everybody that came out on Friday out there at Moe's Barbecue on Bent Creek. That was brought to you by our friends at Sensi Green Heating and Air. Man, we had a great time. Had a ton of people there. Crowd just kept on flowing in all the way from 2 o'clock and into the wee hours of the night. And so we appreciate everybody that came out. And man, we always have a really, really fun time, don't we, Uncle T-Bone, at our live remotes for the ESPN 106.7.
Nobody's working harder in local radio, and no one is having more fun. We bring the party. So if you're looking to have a live remote, hit us up. We will take care of you, and I can promise you we will increase that business for that day.
You better believe
tenfold.
It. Yes, that is absolutely right. Well, we continue to talk some Auburn football as we are wrapping up hour number one. And before we get to another recruiting thing, there is good news for Auburn football, and it's not with football. It's with one of the players. Brian Battee, there was an update that he is now out of ICU. He is also speaking. I don't think it's, you know, anything crazy, but he is out of ICU. He has been able to speak and talk with some of his family members and things like that. And so there's still a long way to go here. There is still a long road for recovery. And frankly, even if there is a full recovery road, I don't know. But thank the Lord that he's at least where he is now, because there was a time where they were legitimately concerned that he was not going to keep his life.
Yeah, God bless. I mean, we talked about it from the day the story broke. It was just evident that this was the type of, I don't want to say injury.
Incident.
Situation where that kid was fighting for his life. His brother lost his life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be something, unfortunately, you know, I'm no medical guy. Don't ever pretend to be. But it just seems like to me, this is going to be the type of situation where he's going to be struggling this probably with his entire life. And he's going to have to deal with it and overcome it both mentally and physically. And great first steps. He's out of ICU. He's going home. And, man, we wish him nothing but the best, and prayers to him and his family and to all the medical people who helped get him over this first hump of being able to sustain life.
Hour number one in the books. We got more to talk about coming up in hour number two. More results and more reactions from the U.S. Open in tournament golf. We'll talk about Bryson DeChambeau, Rory McIlroy, and what's coming up next in the golf calendar, plus more Auburn football things and some other storylines we got to get to. All that coming up in hour number two. It's all coming up here on ESPN 106.7.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I failed to mention this in hour number one. We are 75 days away from Auburn football. Can you believe that? I had to look it up, and I had to make sure that I was correct. And I literally just Googled it again. How many days until August 31st? 75 days. Can you believe that, Uncle T-Bone, as we get underway in this second hour? 75 days until Auburn football gets underway, which means we're less than that from college football getting started because you have those week zero games.
It's hard to believe. I'll tell you something else hard to believe. Give us a ring at 334-321-1390 here at On the Line, the show that tells it like it is and holds nothing back. 30 years ago today, Jacob.
Oh, no. Oh,
30
no.
years ago today, they hounded O.J. and chased him down the interstate in the white Bronco. Can you believe an innocent man riding around minding his own business and the entire world got on camera? And, I mean, where were you? Because I know if you are my age, you remember exactly where you were when the O.J. story broke and he was hounded by law enforcement all over Southern California. Can you believe that?
Give us a text, 334-784-1067. He is dying to know where you were when that historical event happened.
I'll tell you, I was over at Crew Daddy's.
Oh, yeah.
One of our big fans.
Yeah.
And we're out in the front yard playing wiffle ball.
I was going to say, you guys playing a little wiffle ball or something?
Playing a little wiffle
ball. He claims that he plays. I don't know if he actually does.
He's a baller.
I've never seen it.
And sipping on some cold snacks. By the end of the chase, the O.J. chase, there were like 500 people out there in a band. I mean, this huge parties broke out all over Auburn when that went down. Those were the days, man.
You don't want to ask me where I was when that happened.
That's all good, man.
It's all right. Well, yeah, I mean, if you're into that, let us know, because I understand the historical aspect of that, and it's crazy too that he passed away so recently, right?
No, I've forgotten about that already.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And
never did find those killers, man. He searched relentlessly under no stone was unturned for OJ out there trying to figure out what happened.
I can't, man.
I still remember when the story broke.
Wasn't it during the NBA Finals? Like,
yes.
Didn't this happen during the Finals that year?
I remember when the story broke before the chase happened, right? Because I think it was a couple of weeks beforehand that he had missed a flight or something, and he was supposed to do some type of game. Or, he was still a TV announcer at this point. And next thing you know, they're charging him with murder. They're looking for him. It was just a wild time, Jake. I can tell you that the 90s were crazy.
Yeah.
They were nuts, man. You missed one heck of a wild ride.
Yeah.
That I can remember.
Well, all I know is that was a situation that was just a hair before my time. But I do know that OJ has since passed away. And you were excited coming in the studio today to remind everybody that it was the 30-year anniversary of that. So that happened. You also, in, I guess, non-directly related Auburn news, you had the announcement from Charles Barkley that he was retiring from TV after next season, which would be, this is crazy, 25 years of being on television for Charles Barkley. Isn't that wild?
God bless him, man, for doing it that long and doing such a great job and being so entertaining. I hope that he fully just out. I'm done. Yeah. I'm stepping away. So we're not going to have him for March Madness.
Nope. His reign and contract and everything is up at Turner, and he claims that he's not going to work anywhere else. He doesn't want to work anywhere else because he's been with them forever. And I mean, look, let's just be real. ESPN has approached him. I mean, it's blatantly obvious. He talked about it, how other companies have come and talked to him and given him offers, but he said, A, I don't want to work for anybody else, and B, I'm done. I've done it for that'll be 25 years that he's been on TV. And look, I hope that I can do what I do for 25 years, but for a guy that played high-level college basketball, high-level professional basketball, and then has been on television for 25 years, yeah, I bet he's tired of working. I bet he's done.
I've always said that if someone would step up, get him a studio, and get him a show on the radio, simulcasting all over the state of Alabama, that he would dominate a morning sports talk show in this state. It would be crazy town. It would be radio gold. Auburn
He's just
and Alabama.
Media gold.
Auburn and Alabama folks just going at it, and him dropping his bombs.
Who's the Alabama equivalent of a Charles Barkley? Because that's what I wanted to get to, was the fact that he has been such a big promoter of Auburn. I mean, he's been the biggest promoter of Auburn in the public eye.
Joe Namath.
Yeah.
I mean, that's big. Yeah. It's at that level of celebrity.
From an entertainment factor, though, I mean, I don't know.
Basketball-wise, I don't know.
Not even basketball. I mean, I'm just saying in general for Alabama.
I mean, Broadway Joe was big now.
He was.
But he was a little before my time, too.
Yeah.
But he was big news. I mean.
So, I guess that's, I mean, hey.
That would be the closest thing I think that the two could compare to one another. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're about to find out, you know, how incredible or how disappointing Nick Saban's about to be.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good point.
Which is one, you know, I have, College Game Day's lost its luster for me over the last few years. It's gotten a little too showy. It was really good back in the day when they had just one, is it Fernelli or the one story that made you cry?
Yeah.
I mean, they'll break out a dang documentary on you now.
Oh, they will.
It's just like, all right, man. And that's what the SEC Network has really stepped in and done a great job.
With SEC Nation?
Job.
They do a good job, yeah.
And they travel around to the
Tim
campus.
Tim Tebow and Paul. And I mean, stuff. They all do a great job, yeah.
And so we'll see. We'll see. If I'll be tuning in because I'll be interested to see what he has to say. I hope that he is – I know he's going to be entertaining. And I know there's going to be times where he turns on the coach – and lets Herb Street and them have it. But he's in the media now. You know, in the past, he's had that microphone with that Coca-Cola bottle right there, and he can say whatever he wanted to the media. Mm-hmm. He is the media now.
Yeah.
I hope that he approaches this as someone who can simplistically break down stuff and make the average fan like me understand it better, a lot like Gene Chizik did with the SEC Network. Gene was awesome.
Yeah.
And did it with a smile on his face. I know their styles will be different. I just hope he doesn't get on there and it turns into this soapbox of him trying to have some type of college football reformation.
Well, I fear that it already is. I mean, the few times that he's been a part of it, that's exactly what it's been.
I don't want to hear
about...
The
guy admitted to tampering on live television.
Good point. I don't want to hear about the problems in college football on a grand scale every Saturday morning. I need to know why Wisconsin might be able to stop Alabama's run.
Sure. Oh, my God. And imagine if that does happen. Imagine if Wisconsin – because they're not going to be there, but they'll talk about that game.
It's going to be hard for him to separate
love
for the University of Alabama.
I wonder how he's going to do that.
And I don't know if he should.
I mean, Barkley doesn't.
Exactly. I mean, it's like
Barkley never has.
Everybody knows that Nick Saban is one of the biggest proponents for the University of Alabama, especially in football, that there is. So just roll with it. If he gets on there and starts trying to claim, you know, I'm in the media, I'm 50-50, I'm going to be like, all right, buddy, I'm changing the channel.
Yeah, I mean, look.
I need a little bit of homerism in some folks from time to time, and I think that's what made Chuck so great. The Alabama folks even warmed up to him doing it.
Yeah, I mean, look at College Game Day, though. You've got Desmond Howard, who, I mean, it's no secret that he loves Michigan, right? You have Kirk Herbstreit, who does his hardest to hide his Ohio State fandom, but they still give him all.
But there's no secret that he loves Nick Saban.
Well, you're right about that, and he loves the Ohio State Buckeyes too. And I think Nick Saban will be the same way.
You got Reese Bammer Davis, who is one of the biggest Bama guys, going back to his days when he was on Columbus television locally.
I mean, Lee Corso would always talk about the few schools that he loved, right? Florida State and Notre Dame, and I have not seen anything officially. My gut, and apologies if there has been something announced that I've missed. My feeling is that this would be his last year, just given how this past season went, where, I mean, it got to the point where he wasn't even traveling every week. Like, it got that bad. He was doing segments from home. Like, he was doing, I mean, just all different things where he's just gotten so far past what he used to be. I mean, he's just an older guy. I mean, it is what it is. But ESPN, I will die on this hill. They made the best hire in the history of their company when they took on Pat McAfee and brought him in to College Game Day. You don't agree? You don't like Pat McAfee? He's not your style, huh? He's not your taste.
I don't mind him. I know that there's people older than me that can't stand him.
Which I'll be honest,
but that doesn't
matter.
I don't
think they care.
No, they don't care. I think he brings a whole new dynamic to the show, a whole new viewership and fan base to that show that, you know, quite honestly, gotten a little stale.
It had, very much so.
And so he's interesting from time to time. I still think the SEC show's better. I really do.
Yeah.
I mean, for the world I live in, which is Southeastern right. Conference football, yeah. right? I find it way more informative. I think Tim Tebow is an absolute rock star. Feinbaum plays his part well, especially on the Fridays before.
Mm-hmm. Where he does his show live from there.
Where you might catch some clips. And
I mean, nobody's listening to that show because they're listening to us, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, not here locally. They're listening on the line.
Of course.
Jacob goes. Show tells it like it is. Holds nothing back. So I'm with you. McAfee, I'm still haven't decided.
Okay.
You know how I decided, like, I'm going to hate Oklahoma football. I've just decided that. I haven't decided yet. The jury's still out with Uncle Tebow.
There's more for me to say on this, and I want us to keep going here, but I believe we have somebody on the phone line, so let's get to them. 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, guys. This is Shane.
What's up, Shane? Good to hear from you, man.
Hey, man, I was calling in for this exact topic before you brought up Pat, whatever his name is. I hate that guy.
Pat McAfee?
I don't know. Yes. I mean, does he have another shirt other than that tank top that he wears every day?
I do feel like he's kind of a jerk to these people, like when they're trying to make that field goal, too. And it's like some poor Asian girl in chemistry who's never kicked a football in her life. And it's hard to kick a football. And she whiffs it, and he's out there just kind of like going loosey from the peanuts
kicker.
On her.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, ease up a little bit, Pat.
Why did they bring this guy?
Because he's
David
polarizing.
I didn't like Pollock's attitude. He knew what he was talking about, though. But this other guy is just I don't know. He rubs me the wrong way, and he's on every dang ESPN show now. Like mm-hmm. I can't turn on the dang TV without seeing him.
Yeah,
pulling up an article without talking about, well, Pat McAfee this and that. Now there's like a you know, when they do the national title games, and it's like this broadcast and kind of view and this kind of view has got on with him on it, like acting like a fool with the tank top on. Like what do we need this guy for?
They paid him a ton of money because of the entertainment factor that he brings. And there's a lot of people that like you, Shane, that just don't like him. And I totally get it. I do. He is very much out there, right? He is so far on one end of the extreme
Where did he come from? I mean, like, why is he there? Like did he have his own podcast or something?
I think he started out on YouTube live.
That's what he was doing. Him and his buddies started doing.
And Jake Paul? they just need to have their own little thing. Stay away from, you know, my college football.
Well, here's what's crazy, though, is their show on YouTube, they would go live on YouTube every day. I mean, they got to the point where they were having 40, 50,000 people a day tuning in for a 3 or 4 hour show that wasn't gone anywhere else. Wasn't radio, wasn't TV, nothing. It was strictly on YouTube, and ESPN saw an opportunity, and I think they're making quite a bit of money off of him.
How are they making money on people want to listen to this guy talk.
Yeah, I think they're going towards a younger generation. I think they're going for the 16-year-olds that find him funny, find him, you know, the obnoxious character that he is. You know, he's been a WWE commentating for years and you know, former NFL player, things like that. I think ESPN is trying to relate to the 16 to 24-year-olds who they want to watch ESPN for the next 40 years rather than, no offense, but a, you know, an older generation person who is not going to be watching as long just because of math. So I think that's what they're going after.
I think it's horrible. They're going to lose these other people and they're going to have to wait a little while to get their fan base back up. But yeah. I don't listen. I don't watch game day since the guy's been on it. It's just a joke to me.
Do you watch SEC Nation, the SEC Network show?
I do. I'd rather watch that.
I think a lot of people, especially in this area, for sure.
Well, at least there's some intelligence on it. I mean, like, Tebow, you're right. Tim Tebow he knows what he's talking
he's
about.
He's awesome.
I mean, he knows that it's one topic, football. He knows football. So you know, it's informative. I guess this younger generation, they don't want actual knowledge. They just want a bunch of, you know, bouncing around and crap. Use my language, guy. But
no, I mean, I think you're right.
I like some knowledge and some, you know. Hey, these guys know what they're actually talking about. It's
sure.
A little bit, you know, that's more entertainment than you know, just jokery. And I don't think Corso is anything more than just like someone has his hand up his, you know, he's a puppet right now. Is he still on? If it is. Like, he's been on, like, two games a year the past couple of years.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting to. I think my gut feeling is that this is probably his last year. He'll make a couple appearances. They'll probably do, you know, the farewell tour type of thing. And I think they hired McAfee to be his replacement. And you mentioned David Pollack, too. I hated to see him go because I really like David Pollack. I think he's a really good dude. He's, a really, really smart guy. But I think Corso is probably just about done.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, I'd rather see you on there to make a bit. I mean, this McAfee or whatever his name is.
Well, let's get that motion started. I'm with you on that, Shane. Appreciate the call, man. Always great to hear from you. 334-321-1390. You can also text us 334-784-1067. I want to talk a little bit more about this because we were getting into the Barkley thing a little bit, and I hate to see Barkley go off of television.
Golly.
But what he's done for Auburn, I think, cannot go untalked about, unspoken, because, again, he's been one of the biggest spokespeople for Auburn in its history, and I think that's a big deal. We'll wrap that conversation up, get into some more golf talk, more football talk, a ton of other things going on around the world of sports. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Want to remind you real quick that hour number two, each and every day here during On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. They bring you the second hour of the show each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Back after a short break here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
All right, rolling on here in hour number two. And we were talking about, kind of got on a spiral there, but got into good conversation in that first segment. The story that we were getting into was the fact that Charles Barkley, of course, Auburn basketball legend, NBA legend, and what has been a television legend, has announced that he is retiring after this upcoming season of the NBA, which we believe is going to be the final season of the NBA on TNT with Charles Barkley and Shaq and all those Kenny and Ernie Johnson, who, I mean, from a guy like myself who is in this business and does what he does and does dream of doing what he does, Ernie Johnson is one of the best in the business at hosting and just, in his case, babysitting, but he does it so well with those guys. And I know we may not have a ton of NBA fans here, but everybody knows about that show and everybody enjoys that show, or at least enjoys the clips of it, of Shaq and Charles going back and forth. And just, I mean, it's so entertaining. And I hate to see Charles Barkley not be on TV anymore. But what we were getting at was the fact that he has been, and does not hide it, his Auburn love, his admiration for Auburn. He's proud that he came here. He's proud that he played here. And it's no secret that he roots for Auburn. I mean, I always go back to when Bruce Pearl and the Tigers were making their run to the Final Four, and his half of the desk was just completely decked out and decorated in Auburn stuff, right? The balloons and the flags and the streamers and everything. And the guy had a big stuffed tiger sitting on the desk during a CBS March Madness broadcast. Like, it was awesome. And I hate to see him leave TV, but I think he's had a heck of a career, and it still blows my mind that it'll be 25 years for him on TV, Uncle T-Bone. Well,
that's
wild
hard
to
believe.
Me.
He's 61. I guess he'll 62 years old. I guess he just wants to start taking Social Security, just move on with his life.
Yeah, because I'm sure he needs it.
I did not know that his middle name was Wade. Did you know that? Charles Wade Barkley.
I don't guess I knew that.
How about that? Chuck is.
I knew y'all were alike.
Chuck is a living legend. Not just in basketball, but just really in life. I mean, what a gregarious, awesome personality. Very controversial at times.
Had
a little temper on him, which I always admired. And when you're competing in sports, you know, he wasn't going to let anybody push him around.
No.
Told that one guy from Ethiopia's basketball team to get a hamburger. Thought that was a little over the top.
Yeah, I mean, his accolades
like threw
are great.
An elbow.
Yeah, I mean, his accolades are great, though. I mean, he was part of the Dream Team, and you know, I got to see some of his. I've gone back and watched a ton of his highlights, but just recently, I told you that I watched The Last Dance again, the Michael Jordan documentary. I watched it. I think it's the third time I've seen it all the way through. And there's an episode where Barkley is a big part of it, and you know, I didn't grow up getting to watch Charles Barkley play basketball, and so I have grown up with Charles Barkley being the media personality, and he's hilarious. He's awesome, and it's always cool when he comes back to Auburn. He'll make a few trips back here and there, and how cool is it now that he has a statue outside of Neville Arena, what was Auburn Arena. Now, I mean, he's got a statue outside. The first of its kind there. I mean, he's in a guy that deserves it, no doubt about it. And I hope that he is able to be more of a frequent flyer, a frequent guest down here in Auburn. I mean, I feel bad for the guy at times. I really do. Because the few times that he does go to a basketball game, he is hounded by fans. I mean, from every whistle, every timeout at the half, if he doesn't run to the club underneath, I mean, they don't get on him during the game, but as soon as there's a dead ball and there's a media timeout, there is a line of 20, 30, 40 people trying to get pictures with Charles Barkley. I've gotten to meet him a couple of times, and he's a really, really nice dude.
Yeah,
and
he handles it great.
He really does. I give him credit because I don't think I would be able to do it. I mean, that would make me not want to come. I'm just being honest.
And, he's got some favorite places in downtown Auburn. I can't get free plugs, too. You can always find him at, especially on big football weekends.
Sure. And, yeah, no free plugs.
And he is a favorite at the bar and restaurant where he goes to, and everyone loves him, super respectful to everybody and kind and nice and likes to have a good time and likes to have fun and he likes to do it here in Auburn and he loves the place. So I'm with you. Hopefully we'll see more of him. And he'll also have some time now to work on that golf swing of his that, I mean, God bless him for putting that out there and you know, owning up to it and that whole – remember when he was getting lessons on the Golf Channel? I mean, that swing hurt.
We talked about Bryson DeChambeau's 180 that he took in the eyes of the people. How about the 180 that Charles Barkley's golf swing took? I mean, he went from the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen Uncle T-Bone play golf, and we watched Charles Barkley go from that to what was a normal swing. I mean, he would take it back, bring it down about halfway, stop, try to aim, and then flick the wrist, and it was bad. It was, and somehow he got it fixed.
Yeah, he had that hitch in his swing, and it just like
it was horrible.
I mean, I would throw my back out stopping the swing like that right now. I mean, once you pull the trigger, you just got to let it rip
and just see where it goes.
And he had like the yips in his golf swing, man. He's like, I'm gonna get it to here, and then okay, and then I'll follow through with it. And I mean, like I said, it was just painful to watch.
Yeah. Speaking of golf, did you watch him a couple of years ago? It was one of the matches. They've done about 50 of them since. But it was like Tiger Woods and Phil, I think it was the Tiger and Phil Mickelson one, okay, where they had Charles Barkley on the coverage. Did you watch that at all?
I watched
when he was there?
Bit.
I mean, go look that up. There's some of it's not great for radio. But just go look. If you're looking for more Charles Barkley stuff, that's just – gonna make you cackle in the car, go and just look that up. Charles Barkley, the match, and there's some clips of him talking with Tiger Woods, talking with Phil Mickelson. I mean, there's some funny stuff in there. So I at least wanted to bring that up today, that Barkley is going to be retiring off of TV. Hate to see it, but I mean, everything, all good things have to come to an end, I guess. So there is that. We also have some more college football news to talk about when we come back. Plus, we'll give you some updates from Omaha as the Men's College World Series has been rolling on all weekend long. Games going on right now. We have all that for you and more coming up here on the Monday edition of On the Line. You can call us 334-321-1390 or text us in the On the Line text box 334-784-1067. We got 30 more minutes after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. He is Uncle T-Bone. You can give us a call, 334-321-1390. Also, give us or shoot us a text if you want to, 334-784-1067. And some news that came out earlier today, right around lunchtime, Uncle T-Bone. And it's a weird story, but it's in college football. And the headline on ESPN from Adam Rittenberg says Les Miles suing LSU. Yes, LSU being sued by former head coach Les Miles. Says vacated wins drop him below the Hall of Fame threshold. Here's how the article opens up, again from Adam Rittenberg on ESPN.
Okay.
Says, quote, former LSU coach Les Miles is suing the school for vacating wins in response to an NCAA infractions case, a move that dropped Miles below the threshold for College Football Hall of Fame qualifications. Goes on to say that Miles, who coached LSU from 05 to 2016, also named the NCAA and National Football Foundation, which manages the College Football Hall of Fame, as defendants. Says the lawsuit states he was deprived of property rights to the vacated wins and his nomination for the Hall of Fame, which must be done by those affiliated with an NCAA member school. They vacated back in 2023. LSU vacated 37 wins because of recruiting violations stemming from an impermissible benefits paid to the father of former player Vadel Alexander by a former booster. All right, so they took those 37 wins away. The wins coincided with Alexander's playing career from 2012 to 2015 under Les Miles, who went 37-14 during that time. They were vacated, and here's where all this gets real, all right? Those 37 vacated wins dropped Les Miles' overall record from 145-73, a winning percentage of .665, to 108-73, a win percentage of .597. Well, you got to be above 600 to make it in the College Football Hall of Fame. So, Les Miles said, you know what? Screw you. I'll sue. Okay. I mean,
what a frivolous lawsuit and waste of time. What a joke. I've got a lot of issues with this whole thing.
What a crazy story.
First of all, the fact that they've got some cutoff de facto number of winning percentage that you must meet to get into the Hall of Fame, to me, is ridiculous.
Well, there's another story on that that always circulates that we can get to in just a second.
I don't know what that story is, but what if you coached for 15 years and really struggled at terrible places and then got a big time opportunity, won a couple national championships back to back or something, and And then all of a sudden, you know, we're in a fatal car crash or something. I mean, you wouldn't deserve consideration under those circumstances. I mean, come on, man. I mean, sometimes these Hall of Fames to me oftentimes are overrated. Everybody knows who was great and good, and everyone has an opinion on it. And it's like that's being in the College Football Hall of Fame. Does Les Miles deserve to be in there? Yes. I think so. Even if they take these losses away from him, yes. Is he acting like a goofy old person with half a brain cell left? Yes. I mean, this is ridiculous. But in these articles, here's some things that I'd forgotten about that LSU got caught up in.
Hey-o.
In 2012 to 2015. They just gave one player $180,000 over a five-year span, which was part of an embezzlement scheme that I think was cooked up through some folks down there with a local hospital in Baton Rouge. So yeah, nothing to see there. And by the way, Les, this happened under your watch. While you were the coach at LSU, y'all were breaking rules and the NCAA came after you. Not to mention, no one at Oklahoma State, LSU, or Kansas, where he coached when he left LSU, has come on record saying they were the folks that nominated him to be in the College Football Hall of Fame. So this is a weird story. It kind of shows me what I've always thought about Les Miles, that he had a screw loose and was a little weird. I think he had his moments while he was at LSU, especially like when he was eating grass. That would make people question that.
he was on the crazy side sometimes.
He had some very good teams down there that I'm convinced they were breaking rules for a long time down there. And he was the benefactor of that. And when they got caught and busted, this is what ultimately may keep him out of the College Football Hall of Fame. And isn't that what NCAA violations should do?
Yeah, I mean, rules are rules, right? And side note, I totally forgot. I just continue to forget that he went to Kansas.
Where he was a complete failure.
That is such a random thing that he went to Kansas. And I'm looking at a photo of it right now, and it's just like, oh my God. I totally have written that off out of my memory. But his attorney, the attorney for Les Miles, said that Miles was never made aware of the NCAA investigation impacting the years that he coached, nor was he interviewed during the process.
I don't believe that he was completely unaware of those circumstances.
According to
in that investigation, I mean, that... Yeah, he wasn't interviewed, probably because he declined to interview.
I mean, maybe. The lawsuit says, quote, the decision not to provide LSU's, quote, decision not to provide Miles with any form of due process was made in agreement with the NCAA and in furtherance of the LSU's defendants' negotiations with the NCAA concerning additional and more severe penalties that otherwise likely would have been imposed on LSU and its athletics programs. Look, you broke the rules. Your program broke the rules and you got caught. Doesn't matter that you got caught later on. Doesn't matter if you get caught in the act or 20 years down the road. You got caught. And so LSU did what it had to do and they said, okay, we'll take the slap on the wrist. We'll dump those 37 wins and we'll move on with our life. Sure, I'm sure Les Miles is finally figuring out, oh crap, I can't be a part of the Hall of Fame. But get over it. That's what I have to say. Get over it.
I'm with you on that. Due process with the NCAA. What is that?
I didn't think that existed in their world.
It has not existed for Auburn a couple of times. I know that. And $180,000 got him a level one violation. Heck, that's a weekend for a recruit in Tuscaloosa these days.
Yeah, and compare the 2012 year to what's happening 12 years later. I mean, we're openly paying players millions of dollars.
Why
isn't
doesn't the NCAA just suck it up and go back and retroactively just give all these people these wins back that they've taken from them over the years? Because what's happening today in today's college football world is that those type of payments are a joke compared to what's happening now. I've never been a big fan of vacating wins and trophies and stuff either. I saw it with my own eyes. Okay.
Well, I mean, that
I saw the people play.
Right. What is taking a win away a decade, and not just this situation in particular, but in just in general? It's like
this may be the one time that there's ever been like real circumstance of punishment for someone by taking a win away. Les Miles is being punished.
Yeah.
Because under his watch, they were cheating and they got busted.
Yeah.
And they got a bunch of wins taken away from it. And he doesn't like it. And he's going to file a lawsuit because it just seems like in vogue to file lawsuits against the NCAA now.
I mean, maybe it's a good for him. Maybe I mean, he's at least pushing back on it. He's at least fighting
back.
Or
he's suing LSU.
Yeah, he's suing LSU. Yeah. That's what's crazy is suing LSU.
That I have a real problem with that, strictly because how much money did they pay him over the years?
That's a place that stroke his paycheck. Yeah,
they sure did. And you're going to come back because under your watch, y'all were cheating, and the NCAA busted your school that you were in charge of that football program.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you're going to admit you knew anything about it or not, in the rules of the NCAA state, you should have. And I'm going to bet that there's probably some contracts that have been signed that somewhere deep dive in those contracts that say, you know, if something happens retroactively, you're not coming after us. But you talk about an old dog just biting a hand that once fed him. Bro, move on with your life and get a life.
And I'm with you on the fact of this was in 2023. So it was a year ago that LSU vacated 37 wins back from 2012 to 2015. Well, what does getting rid of wins a decade ago, what does that do?
Yeah, that's a dumb.
Why is that your... That's punishment. I mean, that's like as a child when you have to give up, you know, you get in trouble and you're supposed to give up something you like and you give up mowing the lawn. Like, nobody does that. Like, that doesn't matter. You're not giving up anything. It doesn't hurt you at all. Yeah. You got to give up television or give up ice cream.
Yeah, I mean, you're telling me that Les Miles is not going to be able to earn a living moving forward because he's not in the College Football Hall of Fame. What? Here's a question, Jacob. What if he had gotten nominated like before the wins were vacated and they had inducted him into the College Football Hall of Fame? Would they have to kick him out now?
Probably.
And
I don't know what that process
looks like.
There
are really only a few disciplines that get people's attention in college sports. For coaches, it's saying you can't play in any postseason play. For fans, it's not having access to watching your favorite team on television. That was a penalty they used to do, and that was painful. And then for players, it's taking away playing time from them.
And from all of them.
They can't showcase their skills. You know someone's done something very serious when you tell a player, you can't play. Or you tell a coach, like Auburn had to do when they had to come out and say, we're not going into postseason in basketball. Now, mm-hmm. It was going to be questionable whether they got there or not, but that just took the win out of the sails of the rest of the season.
Yeah, which, I mean, you've seen a ton of teams do in the past and you know, those self-imposed bans and things like that.
You know, for a university, if the NCAA wanted to get very serious about punishing universities, they would make them pay massive fines when there's problems.
Which is what I was going to say. That's where you know, that's how you hit these people the hardest. In any aspect, go after their wallet. Go after their bank account. That's when people start getting mad. That's when they feel it. There's some people, you could take everything from them, but the minute you go after that paycheck, oh boy, that's when they start to really get upset. You brought up the fact, too, with this entire story, and again, we're talking about Les Miles, who is suing his former ride, LSU, for vacating wins back from 2012 to 2015 when LSU got caught paying a player from boosters and things like that. You can read the story on ESPN.com. You brought up the frustration of why there's a minimum win percentage to make it into the College Football Hall of Fame, and I said there's another story that always circles around and has continued to circle around for a little bit about why that rule should have a little bit of leniency. Do you know what I'm talking about here?
Not off the top of my head, Jake.
It's the late, great Mike Leach, who, of course, passed away, is one of the most legendary head coaches in all of college football, who changed the game with the air raid offense, who, as of right now, Uncle T-Bone, is not eligible for the College Football Hall of Fame. Would you like to know why? Because his win percentage, when he was done coaching, after he passed away, unfortunately, His final winning percentage as a head coach in college football was .596. He is one win away from the 600 mark and being eligible for the College Football Hall of Fame. And there's a lot of people that are trying and begging and pleading for this rule to be bent just a hair to get him into the College Football Hall of Fame. For somebody that there is no doubt about it, that deserves to be in there. And that's where it sits right now. He has a .596 coaching record. All it takes is one win. That's all it would have taken to get him to that 600 mark for him to qualify the win percentage for the College Football Hall of Fame.
Man, you know, that's – golly. I guess, you know, the stand – this should be a movable target. I mean, the game changes over time. The coaches change over time. The players change over time. I mean, this to me, he should be in the College Football Hall of Fame. I mean, you can win 10 games at Mississippi State. You deserve to be in the College Football Hall of Fame right there. They should just induct you right after the
whistle goes. Yeah.
I mean, and he's taken on some really difficult jobs, places like Texas Tech and Washington State and Mississippi State. It's not like he did that, you know, at the University of Georgia with all the support and money and, you know, everything you get with a high-profile job like that. And he, you know, he did it his way and made his mark. I forgot about this, Jacob. Wasn't Les Miles put on administrative leave while he was the coach at Kansas due to an investigation of inappropriate conduct with female students while at LSU? I mean, that was a pretty nasty story that finally forced him out. Or at least,
I remember there was something that happened. I don't remember if that's what it was.
That story, because he was having such a putrid run while he's the head coach there.
Well, then they were also getting into other. I mean, there was a lot going on there with Les Miles and his short lived time at Kansas. And you remember when they hired him? I mean, everybody was like, "Oh, here we go!" Like. We got a champ in the building. Like, and that's when Kansas football was horrible. That's when Kansas football couldn't win a game. And now, I mean, look at the turnaround they've had in the past handful of years.
They got
them
a coach.
I mean, they've got a program now.
Yeah, listen, that could be a dark horse contender to make the college football playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And Kansas football for a long time was just absolutely putrid.
Especially in a Big 12 now that's weaker than it's ever been.
And he went 3-9. In 0-9 in 19 and 20.
Woo.
Hey, Les, look, you got a buyout from LSU. You got a buyout from Kansas. You got plenty of money. No one on earth would have ever thought less of Les Miles before he filed this lawsuit. No one on earth is going to be like, man, I can't believe Jacob. And call up at 334-321-1390 that Les Miles is not in the College Football Hall of Fame. Can you believe that? That is just an injustice. No one on earth would think any less of him.
You don't think purists or anything would get behind that?
No, I mean, no one would even think about it. They just assume that he's in there because he was good at LSU, and he deserves to be in there.
He's not going to get
now,
grace in this town.
But now everyone else is like, what in the world are you doing, you quirky old dude? Grow old gracefully and take all the wins that you got in life and all those millions of dollars you got from it and enjoy the rest of your life instead of fighting this fight. If that's the hill that he's going to die on, I think less of Les Miles, and now I don't think he should be in the College Football Hall of Fame.
One more thing on the Mike Leach thing, and the reason it's been circulating back in the news for a while here, just a few days ago, the president of the National Football Foundation came out and made a statement saying that he will not be eligible for the Hall of Fame. Says, quote, if you don't qualify under one of the criteria, it's tough, he says. Steve Hatchell told the Mercury News. Says, quote, we've heard every reason why we should look beyond why someone is not in the Hall of Fame, but at some point you have to say these are the rules. So, Mike Leach, according to this guy, according to the president of the National Football Foundation, who is over the Hall of Fame, doesn't matter. Mike Leach fell a game short. And he will not be in the Hall of Fame. Crazy for a guy that, again, I've yet to hear somebody say why he shouldn't be in
there. I bet he's in the Pirate Hall of Fame down there in Florida somewhere. he's an awesome dude, man. We still miss
him. What a legend. What a legend. All right, let's take our final break. We'll come back and wrap it up here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Stay tuned.
You are on the line.
on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Man, we're having a lot of fun. It never fails. Never fails. It's the middle of June. They say nothing's going on, and yet we're having a lot of fun. And there is a lot going on. And so, look, we appreciate you all being with us for the entire show. 1 hour, one segment, doesn't matter to us. 2 to 4 each and every day right here on ESPN for On the Line. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. Again, we appreciate you being with us. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4. I will have Double Deep, Daryl Daprich. It's been a little bit since we've had him, but really looking forward to getting him back on the airwaves. I know he's got some things to say about a lot happening around Auburn Athletics, so we'll get him on the show tomorrow. If you missed any of the show today, we talked U.S. Open. We talked Auburn football recruiting. We've talked Les Miles suing LSU, apparently. We've talked a lot.
We talked about O.J.
Believe it or not, we did talk
Charles
about O.J.
Barkley. I mean, we've just about run the whole gamut.
I mean, we've hit everything. So, if you missed it, you can catch it with the podcast, ESPNAU.com. Coming up after the drive tonight, Bill and Dan will be going on from 4 to 6. And then after that, we have Game 5 of the NBA Finals right here on ESPN 106.7. My Boston Celtics going for the chip. Gosh, they did not do it on Friday night. That was horrible. Maybe they got it out of their system, though. They're back home in Boston, TD Garden. Give me the Celtics. I think we win it tonight. I'll say that until we do it, or if we lose 4 straight, you may never hear me on the radio again.
Yeah, they're going – I think they're a 6.5-point favorite tonight at home to clinch the world championship. So what if they win tonight, do they go back to Dallas? I mean, if they lose tonight, do they go back to Dallas?
For game 6.
Then come back to Boston?
For game 7.
Ooh.
If Boston loses tonight, we're in trouble.
I agree with that.
We're in trouble.
Yeah, I'm going to take your word for it. They're probably going to get the job done tonight. I think that if they go down, you better watch out.
Gosh, it ain't happening. It ain't happening. Boston gets their 18th tonight. Tune in right here on ESPN 106.7, Game 5 of the NBA Finals. We appreciate the Orthopedic Clinic bringing us the second hour of today's show. I'll be back tomorrow. Uncle T-Bone will be back with me on Wednesday. But tune in 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until tomorrow, he's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.